Well, good evening. Nice to see you all. My name's Simon, for those who have not had a chance to meet. I'm part of the leadership team here at the church. It's great to have you. Why don't you just turn to the person next to you and say, very nearly happy Christmas. And not quite there, very nearly happy Christmas. Christmas is just wonderful, isn't it? I love it. I love this season. It's fantastic. We have to admit, it is a little bit strange. You know, giant socks on the fireplace. If you were to take a step back, it's a little bit odd. We have a tree in the lounge, and we think it's just normal to have a tree in the lounge. Even the pets get confused by the whole thing. And we drink warm wine. I mean, what other time of the year can you serve warm wine and get away with it? But Christmas, it's the done thing. People are quite happy about it. And the thing that, one of the things that I love the most is the pies. I mean, pies, you know, a normal time of the year, you see pies, you see a plate of pies, you might have one pie, you might have two pies. At Christmas, I see a plate of pies, I think, I'm going to have six of those bad boys. I'm going to eat six, and I'm going to be happy about it, and I'm going to come back later and have some more. I just love the pies. And, you know, we don't like silly hats, do we? We don't, as a nation, we don't like silly hats. But at Christmas, we all wear silly hats. And you've been there with me on this. You're sitting at the Christmas dinner table, and you pop the crackers, they all go round, and then everyone's thinking the same thing. The hat comes out, everyone's thinking the same thing. I don't want to wear that thing. I'm going to look really stupid if I wear that thing, and I don't want to wear it. Everyone, come on, be honest, everyone is thinking the same thing. But then what happens? The one person puts the hat on. And then another, and then another. And then there's this peer pressure. You think, I'm going to be like a right old Scrooge if I don't put this hat on. So you decide, all right, I'll put the hat on. I'll put it on. So you put the hat on. And then you're sitting there eating your dinner. And halfway through the meal, you suddenly look up and realize, nobody else has got their hat on. And then suddenly it's photo time. And the photos come out later. And everyone else is looking cool in their Christmas jumper. And you're with your stupid hat on. And you're like, where did I miss the official taking off of the hat moment? I felt the peer pressure to put it on. But no one told me to take it off at any point. But the best thing I have to say about Christmas, you might not agree with me, but for me, it's sausages wrapped in bacon. Come on! I mean, the only problem, of course, you never get enough, do you? I mean, you maybe get one or two. I could eat 50 of those bad boys. I mean, you don't get enough. And all I finish my one or two after a few moments, and then all you can do is look at other people's plates. Just you've got to do it very discreetly. You've got to pretend like you just don't care. But you just, sometimes you can see, you know, across the table, there's one being pushed around. You think, I think that one's not going to be eaten. And you've got to wait for the right moment. You know, just the right moment. Pretending nonchalantly, you don't really mind. Take it or leave it. But you've got your fork ready under the table. are you going to eat that? Boom! I mean, the best thing, of course, is to strategically sit next to the non-sausage eaters. You know, small children sometimes can't finish their plate. There's a start. Sometimes, you know, elderly relatives can't quite finish a whole Christmas dinner. The best, of course, is vegetarians. Find the vegetarian. And then you can say, you know, sausage wrapped in bacon. And, oh, no, of course, I forgot. How silly of me. Do you mind if I have yours while you enjoy your nut cutlet? Michael McIntyre sums it up the best for us because he said there's one moment at Christmas which we can all relate to. Whether you're 5 or 95, there's that moment where all the Christmas presents have been opened, the wrapping paper's put away, and everyone, trying to pretend like they're relaxed, gathers their presents together and then carries them to their room and goes through them one by one. We all do that, don't we, every year. The thing about Christmas that I dislike, though, is the travel. The journeys, you know, I endure it. Sometimes I enjoy it, but mostly I endure it. In 1492, Christopher Columbus traveled to the Americas. Here's his boat. Here's Christopher Columbus. They caught him happy hour. They said afterwards that the journey was almost a disaster because he didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. And when he got back, He didn't know where he'd just been. You see, he was trying to go to Japan. He missed by a few thousand miles. He didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. And when he got back, he didn't really know where he'd been. And we see this intriguing story in this Christmas story of these wise men. We just heard it, the Magi. These men, we don't know that there were three. Early church history tells us that there were three. The original script, the Bible, doesn't say that there were three. It just says there were these group of wise men. And they gave these gifts, and they traveled because they saw a star. They saw a star in the east. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is we picture them following this kind of moving globe of light. But I don't think it was like that. I think they were those who were looking at the stars. And because they knew that a king had been predicted to come, a significant king was going to be born, when they saw this particular star arrangement, they knew at that point they needed to travel to Jerusalem because of the predictions that had been there in the past. And the thing is, though, they didn't really know where they were going. Just like Columbus, they didn't really know where they were going. When they got to Jerusalem, they didn't know where they were headed to next. And we're a little bit like that. We're a little bit like that, the wise men, I think. And it's often at Christmas time that we realize that I'm not really sure I know where I'm going. I don't mean we don't know where we're going when we're going to grandma's, although that does happen. But I mean, we don't really feel like we know where we're going, because it's at Christmas often we ask the big questions. It's often when we pause, as it were, in life and ask and think about the big questions. I know, for me, I remember one year, kids were young and we were at the grandparents and we had all the cousins there and loads of us. And we'd gone overboard on the presents. The grandparents had gone overboard. The relatives had. And so we had, I couldn't describe it as a pile of Christmas presents, more like a mountain of Christmas presents. This thing was so tall you had to have a stepladder to get to the top one. You know, it was that kind of thing. And I kid you not, it took, because we did one person open a present at a time, it took 4 hours to open the presents. I mean, I lost the will to live halfway through. It was the first recorded case of blood poisoning from the ink on the wrapping paper. I mean, by the end of it, the kids were like opening one next. They weren't even looking at it. They were just like unwrapping. And afterwards, Caroline and I, my wife and I, said to each other, I wonder if we've missed the point of Christmas. Christmas is often a time where we stop and we ask the big questions. And it's interesting because the big questions sometimes are like, what is the point? Why am I here? Where am I really going? Where is this heading? Maybe it's at Christmas we realize that the year hasn't quite been what we'd hoped it to be. It would be. Perhaps relationships we realize as we come back together have not moved on. In fact, perhaps they've even got worse. Perhaps we've had significant difficulties in this year and we reflect on them over Christmas. Sometimes it's more a fact of we suddenly think, I thought I was living for some purpose, but I'm not sure I really am. Is my life really going to count? Is there a sense of significance to what I'm doing? Sometimes it's at Christmas that we stop and think about, where am I really going? So we can feel sometimes a little bit lost, going back to our journey analogy. Sometimes it's at Christmas we can feel a little bit lost. Sometimes we can feel a little bit even hopeless. And it's interesting, though, because in the midst of this feeling, perhaps, of hopelessness, hope is probably the core, the central message that comes through at Christmas. It's the fact that God has a sovereign plan over everything. The original script, the Bible says, he is working all things together for good for those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. What's it saying? It's saying that for those that align themselves with God and his plan, it's all going to be okay. There is hope. There is a direction. There is a purpose for this life. And it's not illustrated anywhere better than in the life of Christ, because before Jesus was born, there were hundreds, over 300, in fact, 322 different predictions about who this king would be, who this Messiah would be. We heard that Herod knew about it before the wise men arrived. 322 distinct predictions about where he would be born, what he would be like, even how he would die. One of the most likely reasons that the wise men knew to go to Jerusalem was because of these predictions that were circulated. And there was a book written by called Science Speaks by a guy called Peter Stoner. And he said this. He said, look, just take eight of these predictions, eight of these prophecies. Not all 322, just take eight of them. He said, the likelihood of one man fulfilling just eight of these prophecies, which were given hundreds of years before Jesus was born, the likelihood is one in 100 quadrillion. That sounds like a made-up number, doesn't it? It isn't. It's one with 17 zeros after it. That's the likelihood of one man fulfilling. Put it another way, it doesn't happen every day. Now, Peter Stoner is from Texas. Don't hold that against him. Don't mess with Texas, as they say. Thank you. And he says, look, if you find it hard to get your mind around 1 to the power of 17, one with 17 zeros after it. He said, picture this. He says, take 100 quadrillion coins, he said, and put them onto the state of Texas. He said, now Texas is about 2.5 times the size of the UK. So he says, put them onto the state of Texas, spread them around. He said, if you took 100 quadrillion coins and you put them over Texas, they would be a pile 2 feet deep right the way across Texas. That's what 100 quadrillion looks like. He said, now take one coin and mark it with a cross and lob it into the middle of Texas and then stir the whole lot up, you know, for a few months. Make sure it's nice and mixed. And he said, then take a guy, you know, just an average guy off the street, someone with plenty of time on his hands. And take this guy, he said, now blindfold him and send him out and say, look, you can walk for as long as you like. You can wade through coins for as long as you like. You can go in whatever direction that you like. You know, don't go into Oklahoma, but stay in Texas. But, you know, go as long as you like. You are only, though, allowed to pick up one coin. He said, what's the chance of that guy finding the one coin that you've marked? That's the same chance as one man fulfilling just 8 of these predictions. Not 322, just 8 of them. That's what he says. The point, of course, is this. We might not know where we're going, but God has a plan. And he is the one who can sovereignly align things in our lives, the good and the bad. If we align ourselves with him, he promises it's all going to be okay. The one who arranged Jesus' life is the one that who can arrange your life and my life, if we will align ourselves with him. Only he can help us find hope in a hopeless place. The thing is, Columbus didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. And the wise men were the same. They didn't know where they were. I mean, they knew they were in Jerusalem, but they didn't know what they walked into because they didn't know where to go next. They knew they had to come to Jerusalem. They didn't know where to find this Messiah. So what do? They ask for help. They stop for directions. They ask for help. And the problem was, the person they asked was Herod. And Herod was a nutter. I mean, he was a total psychopath. He really was. He hurt people just for fun. He was a complete and utter nutter. And he was a sort of guy, it really wasn't pleasant to be around. And the wise men did not know what they walked into. They thought they were kind of finding guys who were, you know, on the same happy journey looking for a new king. Herod was not that kind of guy. As far as he was concerned, the only good baby king was a deceased baby king, as far as he was concerned. And it's the same for us, you know, in life. Sometimes we meet people and we think, gosh, these people are just out to hurt people. We get hurt by people. We meet some nutters in life. Not about you. Obviously, I'm not talking about the person sitting next to you. I'm talking about as we go through. Some of you are like, yes, I think you are. What I mean is, as we go through life, we get hurt, don't we? We get wounded sometimes by the people that we meet. I heard a story of a guy who joined a monastery. He took a vow of silence. And after he took this vow, he was only allowed to say 2 words every 7 years. First 7 years went by, the abbot called him in and said, we want your first 2 words. He said, cold floors. They sent him away. Another 7 years went by, abbot calls him in. Want your next 2 words? He said, bad food. Sent him away again, another 7 years, called him back in. The abbot says, we want your third 2 words. And he said, I quit. And the abbot said, I'm not surprised, really. You've done nothing but complain since you got here. You see, we laugh, but actually, when we think about it, and sometimes it's at Christmas that we reflect on these things, we get hurt by people. Sometimes people who are just cruel. And what's more than that, we hurt others. And sometimes it's a Christmas when we realize how much we've hurt people. I mean, do you have any regrets? I guess the question for us all is, who doesn't have any regrets? I wish I'd done this. I wish I hadn't done that. I should have done that. I should not have done that. Sometimes we realize in the mess of it, in the original script, the Bible, the word for regret is sin. And it's like an overdraft. It's like across not just a year, but a lifetime, these regrets build up. And they become like an overdraft. And the thing is, if you've got an overdraft and I've got an overdraft, I cannot help you and you cannot help me. The only one who can help us is someone who's in credit. And so Christmas not only tells us where we are going, it tells us where we are. It tells us where we are in a very unique way, because this is why I love the story so much, because it tells the story not of a God who descended into a palace, but a God who incarnated, who came to be with us in a stable, in the mess, in the rawness, in the pain of humanity, in a small, insignificant, occupied nation. God came to be there. Emmanuel, God with us. And we're going to sing a carol in a moment, if I can get the band to come back up, called Silent Night. Let me read to you just the last verse of this carol. Silent night, holy night, Son of God, love's pure light, radiant beams from thy holy face with the dawn of redeeming grace. Jesus, Lord, at thy birth. The point, of course, is this. Into the darkness came a light. Into the hopelessness came hope himself. We really can find love and hope in a hopeless place. And Jesus Christ was the one who said he came to bring it. And I feel like, as I said before, the wise men, they didn't know where they were going. When they got there, they didn't really know where they were. And when they got back, they didn't really know where they'd just been. Obviously, they knew where they'd been geographically. They knew that they'd been to Jerusalem. But I wonder if they knew the significance of it. I wonder if they knew the significance of the things that they had seen. And I think, you know, we can be like that. We can miss the significance of the things that we see on this journey of life. The points where God himself is speaking to us. We can so easily miss it. They gave him these gifts, didn't they? They gave this child, this baby king, gifts. Gold, frankincense. Gold represents the fact that he was a king. Frankincense in those days represented prayer. It represented the fact that he in some way would make a way for us to connect, to commune with God himself. I like that they gave gifts. It sets us up to give gifts to one another. That's good news. I'm happy about that. You don't always get what you want, obviously. I asked my mum, you know, one year if we could have a dog for Christmas, and she said, forget it, we're having a turkey like everyone else. But it's the third gift that's actually the most interesting. The third gift was myrrh. And myrrh was used for embalming. It represented death. I wonder if these guys knew the significance of their gifts. Death. What a gift. And it's during this season, you see, because we celebrate the birth of Christ. But you see, you cannot leave Jesus in the cradle. You know, when you go around and you see statues of famous people, you know, you go to London, you see a statue of Nelson and Nelson's column at the top. You don't see Nelson in a pushchair, do you? You know, you don't walk around and see statues of Winston Churchill in a nappy with a baby-sized cigar. You cannot leave people in the cradle, and we can't leave Jesus in that place. The question, perhaps, is not why the manger, although that's an important question. The bigger question is why the cross, where it went to, where it ended. Why is that significant for us? And the original script says he died on the cross to purchase forgiveness for us. He was, as it were, writing a check for each one of us, signed in his blood, to pay the overdraft that you owe and that I owe. He was the only one who could pay it. And if you've got an overdraft and I've got an overdraft, I can't help you, you can't help me. The only one who can help us is someone who's in credit. And Jesus Christ said that he was the one who was in credit. He claimed to be the sinless, no regrets Son of God. The one who said, I've never done anything wrong. And I am the one who can pay the price for your regret. That's what he claimed. I guess the question is, how can we know that he was speaking the truth? There's lots of different reasons, but one that stands out to me is the fact that his own brothers in later life declared that they believed that their brother Jesus was the Son of God. Who here has got a brother who thinks he's God? Who believes him? Who believes him? But Jesus, his own brothers, although at first it says in the original script that they doubted, it says ultimately they became the center of this new church, this group of followers who were claiming that Jesus was the Son of God, spotless, no regrets. And in fact, they also went on to be martyred for the fact they refused to deny the truth of what they were declaring. If Jesus really is the only one in credit, then he is the only one who can help us clear this sense of overdraft. Jesus came into this world not to rub it in, but to rub it out. Don't miss Christmas. You know, it's possible to miss Christmas. A lot of people miss the first Christmas. Herod was so arrogant that he missed Christmas. He missed it. He refused to bow the knee to this new king. He was so intent on protecting. He refused to bow the knee to the new king. He missed Christmas. So many people miss Christmas. A friend of mine told a story. He was telling this story of Christmas, the meaning of Christmas, to a group of people. And afterwards, a guy came up to me and said, "I believe everything that you said, but I'm not a Christian." He said, "What do you mean you believe everything I said? You're not a Christian." He said, "I believe everything that you said about this Jesus and who he was and what he came to do, but I'm not a Christian." And he said, "Why?" He said, "Because my wife has been a Christian for many years, and if I were to become a Christian, I would be admitting that she was right." And my friend looked at him and said, "You are crazy that you would miss Christmas because you refuse to humble yourself to admit that your wife might have been right all these years." Don't miss Christmas. Scrooge missed Christmas, or he almost missed it. There's that scene where Scrooge has encountered the ghost of Christmas past, and he wakes up. There's an incredible visit. He's clearly shaken by it. But then, does he take it to heart? No, he doesn't. He says, "Bah, humbug. Probably a bit of last night's undigested beef. There's more gravy about this than grave," is what he said. Don't miss Christmas. The religious leaders of Jesus' day, they missed Christmas. They had been studying these predictions, these prophecies of Jesus, all 322 of them. In fact, as part of their training, they had to memorize them. So they knew that there was a Messiah coming, and yet they refused to walk 5 miles from Jerusalem to Bethlehem to check it out. They missed it. They missed it. And yet compare that to the wise men who traveled thousands of miles to visit this promised king. It says in the original script, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. That's 4 ways of saying they were really, really happy. They were really happy with this news. If you remove the word Christ from Christmas, you end up with M&S. I like M&S. I like the food hall particularly. You know, I would even be willing to consider parting with a finger for a lifetime supply of those mini flapjack bites in a tub. But M&S is not going to give you hope in a hopeless place. Without Christ, you're left with M&S, and so many people, that's all they see of Christmas. The gift of Christmas is Christ. This is the season to receive Christ. It's the season to literally bow the knee to a new king. If you know you've got an overdraft and you need to receive forgiveness to clear that debt, this is the season. It's also a season to renew our faith. Sometimes when we stop at Christmas, we realize we've drifted, we've diverted, we've gone after the M&S, and we've missed the Christ of Christmas. It's a great season to renew our faith. It's the season that perhaps if we're fearful about family, that we can come again and find that the Prince of Peace is the one who not only brings us peace, but also casts out and drives out all fear. And in a couple of minutes, I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm not going to ask you to walk 5 miles. I'm going to ask you to respond in your heart. We're going to hear a song about this Jesus who brings hope in a hopeless place. And as we conclude that song, I'm going to pray. And I'm going to ask you to pray in your heart if you want to respond with me to this message of Christmas. The band is going to come up. Let me read you one of the verses of this song about this Jesus who brings love, who brings hope into a hopeless place. He says this, "I came down to meet you, tell you that I love you. You don't know how lovely you are. I had to find you, tell you that I want you, tell you that I set you apart." That's the point. He came into our hopeless place. Hopeless for the things of the past, hopeless for the things of the future. He incarnated, he came into that place to find us, to reach us. And the question for each of us is what's the response? We all at some point have to make a response to this message. I had to make a response. I wasn't born a Christian. Just being born in the UK doesn't make you a Christian. Just like being born in McDonald's doesn't make me a hamburger. I wasn't born in McDonald's, by the way. You get my point, though. You see, you can't be born into this. You have to make a response to it. It's a message that requires a response from each one of us. And so if you need to receive Christ, if you need to receive forgiveness, if you need to receive the debt, the regret being washed away, this is a great time, this time of year. And